Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Sail to the plate. Swing and a high fly ball. Well hit left field. Way back there. Out of here. Chris Bryant back in San Diego. It sure feels like home. And the away team takes a 1-0 lead. The 2-2 in there. Got him looking. Ozuna knew it. And Kluber works a 1-2-3 second. The 1-1 is hit in the air left field. Well struck. Gonzalez back track. Wall. Out of here. He goes the opposite way, and we are all tied up. It is 1-1. The pitch. Swing and a high fly ball. Left field. Way back there. Cargo turns, and he'll watch it go. So a single and then a two-run homer. Salvador Perez has given the American League a 3-1 lead. Here's the 0-1. Swing and a bouncer towards third. Donaldson gloves. Goes to Nunez at second one. Return to first. And that's a double play. That is the ball game. The American League wins it 4-2, the final score. And the AL has won 4 in a row.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
That could be good news for the Cleveland Indians or the Detroit Tigers. Or last year's champions, the Kansas City Royals. The American League getting it done once again in all-star play. What's going on? Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 for The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. This is the extravaganza. Thanks so much for spending the time with us. Christian, you hate it, and I hate it, and everybody else hates it. It's stupid. Talking, of course, about the all-star game deciding home field advantage in the World Series. But at least it's working out to our advantage, if indeed you are a fan of an American League team, as probably 99% of the people listening to us right now are, either Tigers or Indians. I suppose there might be some Reds fans in the area. But most of us are pretty happy. And the Reds don't matter, because they're about as close to the World Series as the Browns are to the Super Bowl.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, the thing that obviously was getting to me, and I know a lot of people are wondering this, is, now, well, wait a minute. Why is the American League team home yesterday? I know in the first couple innings that threw me off until I was like, oh, here's why, because of a quirk in former Commissioner Bud Selig and how he awarded All-Star games. He's trying to give them to, or was, and I'm sure Rob Manfred's continuing this idea. If somebody's opening a new ballpark, they're going to go first. So this is apparently the second of four consecutive years. Last year, Cincinnati. This year, San Diego. Next year, Miami, for example. The year after, Washington. So that's four in a row in National League parks. So I guess the apparent logic was, so as to not have the National League be the home team in this game, that matters. For four straight years, they're just going to alternate it. I looked it up. That's not the first time that a league has hosted the All-Star game consecutive years. There was one time back in the 50s, for example, that nationally got two in a row, but they never did this until now.
See, I didn't even know that they intended to go National American like that. I didn't know they intended to go back and forth year after year. I thought it was
actually,
more.
It was just a happy accident most of the time.
I just assumed whenever cities put in bids, you know, with the league to say, hey, we want to host. And of course, everybody wants to host. You know, they, it's kind of like the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You kind of, you know, pick these sites on a what's the best pitch, almost like the Olympics, where on what's the best pitch kind of a thing. Certainly
that's
a city
point.
Opening up a new ballpark or franchise opening up a new ballpark in the city is going to draw attention for an all-star game. But beyond that, I just thought it was more like they kind of worked their way through based on pitches and presentations made, and I didn't know they intentionally went from one league to the other alternating years.
Yeah, and again, it worked out by accident for most of the time. Hey, I'm going to look up because
It an accident? I mean, it sounds like it was intended. I mean, how do you have that accidentally for almost all of those years? It sounds like that's the game plan.
Yeah,
the game plan is to go every other league, and then therefore every other league, every other year, you know, the other league is the home team. If you happen to be in that park. I completely understand why they did this last night. Makes sense. If you do have back-to-back years in one league or multiple years in a row, then you take turns. American League home team 1 year, National League.
And that's especially the case if this game is going to continue to count and all that nonsense instead of just the old school exhibition that it used to be.
You can hear the disdain dripping from your voice and your lips when you say this. No.
I'm sorry. There's a lot of things overall in Major League Baseball that one can complain about. One of them's always stuck in my craw, Bob, has been they don't promote their stars, say, the way the NBA does. And I think that's really kind of needed in some ways in baseball. But the whole All-Star Game stuff has been annoying me, and I can't believe it. It's 2016, so it's been this format since 2003, since the old tie in Milwaukee, while Bud Selig, who once owned that team, of course, was in attendance that night. And it's been this ever since, and it's still nonsense that this game has to count for home field, and that, of course, took over for the World Series, and that, of course, took over the old way of doing it, which is just they alternated leagues. I mean, why baseball can't get that very, very simple, sounding simple to us anyway, thing correct, which is if you have the better record, you have home field in the World Series. I don't know what's so hard about this, but baseball just doesn't seem to want to do it.
Well, I think what it is baseball wants their All-Star game to matter more. And if you think about it, I get that point. Everybody knows the Pro Bowl, which is pretty much defunct. I mean, everybody stopped watching it a long time ago. It went really off the rails, what, 2 or 3 years ago when you had centers like Alex Mack scoring 60-yard touchdowns. And I mean, it's just a joke of a game. Nobody wants to get hurt, so thus nobody wants to block hard. Nobody wants to tackle hard. Only the runners want to run hard because they want to be able to do a dance in the end zone in the Pro Bowl. We know that the Pro Bowl has been a joke for at least a couple decades now. I mean, honestly, literally going back into the early 90s, I would say that or mid-90s, that the Pro Bowl has just been a laughingstock. So if you consider that, and then you look at the NBA All-Star Game, which, of course, gets everybody excited, but I think, the three-point shootout is probably as exciting. And then again, they went and jacked around with the rules in that, too, and messed that up this year. The dunk contest has flown the coop. For the most part, again, you get an occasional great showdown in the finals, but they've jacked around with its rules, and the best stars don't do it all the time, that's less than exciting. And then the game itself, we know what it is. It's 48 minutes of jacking up threes and alley-oop dunks. Nobody plays defense until maybe the final 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, and that's only if the game is in doubt at that time. So it's a joke. So baseball, in the ongoing attempt, of course, to, capture the public imagination and the public attention and the public dollars, is saying, let's make our game count. Let's make our game in the middle of the year mean something. And I think they started to get a little bit embarrassed by some of the goofiness that used to go on, too. And if you remember, Randy Johnson throwing one to the screen and making John Kruk turn around and bat right-handed. He turned around and put his helmet on backwards.
I thought that was Larry Walker that did that.
It was Larry Walker.
It was Larry
Walker
because he did it in Cleveland. That was the 97 one in Cleveland, which was a shout-out to the 93 one when it was Kruk.
Right. Thank you.
But Kruk swung at a pitch that was about 5 miles outside of the strike zone because he didn't know what to do.
Well, that was right after Johnson threw one to the screen, like
right.
over his
that
head.
That was the first time, and that he wasn't doing that one on purpose.
That's
the 97 one with Larry Walker he did on purpose, and that's when he turned the helmet around and went to the other side for a pitch.
There you go.
And
that's what it was.
Laugh.
It was Larry Walker. Great call there, Jim. I appreciate it. I was mixing up two different guys' embarrassments in the All-Star
Honestly,
game.
I only remember that because that was the game in Cleveland in 97.
But that's the silliness, again, that the All-Star Game had become. It's just, it's a goofball time, a goof-around time, and as we know, not the best players make it because they let the fans vote for the starters. And we know that the fact that every team has to have a representative means some better players that could help their league win are left home because of the roster limitations. And so I think they were saying, let's get rid of the silliness. Let's make it count. Let's make the World Series, put the World Series in the balance, based on the outcome of the All-Star game, and we'll do that. And to that extent, it has mattered more. because, you know, they are playing it more to win. There's not as much silliness, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. But the part that makes it so stupid is, again, that they continue to let the fans jack around and decide these things. You know, the Kansas City Royals last year in full ballot box stuffing mode said the heck with the, you know, with the actual spirit of the game by putting the best players there. We're going to vote for every Royal. We're going to get somebody who's, you know, close to being DFA'd, for crying out loud, a starting spot in the I mean, seriously.
And, you're not wrong, you know, when you say it like that.
And then this year, they did exactly that again. They didn't get quite as successful. They had four, but, you know, the Cubs, of course, had seven. You could argue the Cubs deserved it given their record, but still, seven when you're only talking about a 25, or is it a 30-man roster in the All-Star game?
I think it's supposed to be 30 before you get to injury replacements.
Yeah, well, I'm just talking about the number that are the number that are actually named to
right.
the team.
Yeah, I think it's 30.
All right, so you got, you know, you're still limited there, and so if you're going to let the fans do it, which is not choosing the best players, it's choosing whichever fan base is getting the best attendance and whichever ones have no lives and are going to go home and sit there at the computer and vote 25 times a day, which is what you're allowed to do, I think the max was. If you're going to make the game count, you got to take that away. And if you're going to make the game count, you got to take away the everybody gets a representation. And in watching it last night too, you know, you heard them talking about how, you know, it is the goal to make sure that every uniform is represented, not just in the dugout, but on the field, that everybody gets a chance to play. Joe Buck was talking about how that's, you know, it's a big deal to try to get everybody there. I don't think he was talking about the American League as much. I don't think Yost has necessarily said as much. But, you know, what he was essentially saying is, you know, we want to make it inclusionary. It reminds me of the whole little kid thing, you know, the participation ribbon. Everybody has to be included. It's really mean and borderline bullying if everybody doesn't get a chance to participate. And that's what they do. So if you're going to make sure that every uniform is represented, not just in the dugout, but in the game, even if it might not be the best decision to take somebody else out who's hot and who's got a couple of hits maybe in the first couple of innings already, but it's just their turn to come out so somebody else can come on, and you don't win the games because of that, then what have you done for the World Series anyway?
Right.
You know, so
what's interesting is when you say it like this, too. I mean, you know, when you factor in the it counts part, then even I'm slightly against the everybody being represented / trying to get everybody on the field. I mean, because honestly, growing up, and I still kind of have this feeling.
Not everybody.
Just
to be clear. Hold on, Jim.
Okay.
Just to be clear, not everybody. That's not what they said. They didn't say every single player is going to get on the field. That's not what they said.
That's true. Good point.
What they said was, I mean, everybody that's on the roster. First of all, you got some pitchers who aren't available anyway.
Right.
So we know that.
And they got a replacement.
And then you have replacements as well. But we're not necessarily saying everybody there has to play, but every uniform. And if that means if you've got two players from your team on there, at least one of them is going to get into the game.
So I follow what you're saying.
Every uniform is represented in that game, either on the mound or in the batter's box or play in the field. That's what they were talking about.
Fair enough. My thing that I was saying, and this, I always liked this growing up. Maybe it's because the Indians were still in municipal and were horrible in those days. I always liked the rule where every team has to have a rep. I wish the NFL would do that for their Pro Bowl. Honestly, there's more than enough roster spots on a Pro Bowl, for example. But, you know, what's really interesting about this whole conversation is...
Well, hold on. Yeah, but that's because the Pro Bowl is after the season ends, and it doesn't matter. You can go ahead and name one from every team.
I think you should. That's just
you can mix them up the way they have now with their recent abominations with Team Rice versus Team Dion and all this other crap. Yeah, I mean, because it doesn't matter anyway. It's just an exhibition game after the whole season ends. But if you're going to put the, you know, stakes on it, such as home field in Game 7 of the World Series, or better yet, Games 1 and 2, to get it off started right in the World Series in one league's ballpark, then you got to play to win, from stocking the rosters to no, not everybody's going to play. No, not every uniform is going to be represented.
No, and I agree with that. And back in the day, in the early days of the All-Star game, I'm talking 30s, 40s, and 50s, you know, your starter would go at least five innings, for example. A lot of guys wouldn't get replaced. Like, for example, the famed 41 game where Ted Williams hits the walk-off home run, I think he started that game, meaning he never got replaced at any point during that game. And granted, that's 1941, but it shows you the differences between now and then. And all I was saying is, especially if you throw out the whole counting it concept and just go back to an old school exhibition, then I've always liked the rule of every team gets a representative. I've always felt that that's a good idea. Like I said, football should do that for their Pro Bowl roster.
If you throw out the counting it concept, okay, from the standpoint that, it doesn't matter if the best players are selected.
Right.
Because home field isn't going to be in play. But even then, I still didn't like it. And here's the reason why, Jim. Look at Ian Kinsler, just as an example. Throw Kinsler's name up there. And I know there might be somebody else who was more deserving who didn't make it than Ian Kinsler, but he's one who is certainly deserving. I don't know, who's the worst team in baseball right now? Who's the worst team in baseball?
Twins.
If the Minnesota Twins' best player is having a worse year than Ian Kinsler is having, and that player gets picked to the All-Star game because we got to have a Twins jersey in there, somebody from every franchise gets represented, it's equal and it's fair, and we got to make sure everybody participates. It's almost baseball socialism. If everybody has to have an equal amount of share, or not an equal amount, but equal opportunity, every franchise has a player represented. And yeah. Ian Kinsler's got a clause in his contract that pays him an extra $2 million for making the All-Star team, or 500 Gs, or 50 Gs. I don't care. If there's money to be made, not to mention your career resume, when you retire, if you're a great player, and when we're talking about All-Stars, obviously some of them are flashes in the pan, but if you're talking about great players that make All-Star teams, at the end of their career, what do we just do when Tim Duncan just retired? We're sitting there running down 5 championships,
right.
17 All-Star games, 10 first team All-NBA, and all of this stuff. That matters. These guys shouldn't have their deserved accolades limited by this notion that in order to be fair and equitable to all cities and teams, everybody gets a representative. And a guy like Kinsler, in just this example, misses out on another number next to his name of All-Star appearances because he played for the wrong team and Cabrera was already there. That's a stupid.
No, you're right, and I'm trying to look it up to double check, because what's interesting is we use the Twins because they're the worst team right now, although their one All-Star, Eduardo Nunez, was actually deserved because he's around 300 hitter right now and is
I wasn't talking about him. That's why I asked. Pick the worst team. You could pick probably up to about 3 or 4 teams that are the worst teams in baseball right now. My point, though, was going to be the same. I don't care who it is. There's going to be somebody who makes the team because of the everybody has to be represented rule, and it's going to cost somebody else who's better than them a spot because he plays on a team that already has 1 or 2 or 3 representatives.
Right. But by the way, I finished looking it up because out of sheer curiosity, since we're apparently in a mode right now with the All-Star game where it's that was the second of 4 in a row that'll be in National League parks. Here are the other times where that Major League Baseball, for whatever reason, did not alternate between leagues in terms of hosting the All-Star game. 1952-53, it was in Philly, and then it was in Cincinnati for 52 and 53. 58 and the first one for 59 were in Pittsburgh and then L.A. And I say first one because for some reason in 59, 60, and 61, they played 2 games. I don't even remember the story as to why they did that. Speaking of that, 1960, both All-Star games were in American League parks, Kansas City and Yankee Stadium. So prior to now, those are the only times that they've ever had consecutive All-Star games, even if they're in the same year, in the same league's ballpark, but they never changed the home road like they did yesterday.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. And again, I think that makes sense. If you're not gonna alternate ballparks by league, then you got to go ahead and alternate the home team just by year, one after the other. And there's no problem with that. I was just you mentioned the Twins as the worst team, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
When I said, hey, who is the worst team? By a game, it's actually the Braves. They got 31 wins to 32 for the Twins.
Okay.
I didn't actually look at their percentage.
I knew they were both close to the bottom, both of them.
Yeah, and essentially all I'm trying to do here is look and see, just to see if we can find a more concrete example of my Ian Kinsler example that I just kind of threw out, just pulled out of thin air.
Right.
And if you look at representation for the Braves, who do you have? You got Julio Teheran, and that's it. He is their one representative. Because I was looking at their stats as you were talking. Freddie Freeman is their leading hitter, and he's hitting 286. He's not an all-star. He has 16 home runs, only 34 RBIs. That's a lot of near-solo home runs, for goodness sakes. That's all they got. That's their best position player, apparently. He leads them in home runs, batting average. Nick Markakis leads them in RBIs with 47. None of those numbers would lead to somebody being an all-star. And if you look at pitching, you know, they've got Julio Teheran. He has started 18 games. He is what is he? He's 3-8. Is that right? Did he make the All-Star team with a 3-8 record? He does have an ERA of sub 3 at 2.96. That's how bad it's gotten. This is what I'm talking about. This guy is their lone All-Star. And he's chosen because everybody has to be represented. Every team has to have a representative.
Right.
And I promise you, his 3-8 record with his 2.96 got him in over somebody who is more deserving of it. And if you want to go through, everybody puts one of these out every year, the list of National League snubs and American League snubs, you're going to find guys there, I promise you, who lost money because they didn't make the team. You're going to find guys who, you know, who would very much like to have put another hash mark next to their name, their career totals of All-Star games made. And they couldn't because roster spots go to guys like that from bad teams who aren't having years as good as the teams guys on teams with more representation. So that's just an example. I threw out Kinsler just to throw one out, but there's an example of a guy who made it because everybody has to make it. 3-8. I know he has a 2.96, but 3-8. Come on. I mean, let's be real. Whether he's getting run support or not, we've seen that in a lot of other pitchers. You see it with Corey Kluber
sure.
the last couple of years in Cleveland. And it happens everywhere. But anyway, the bottom line is, I think, once again, that last night, while being nice theater, it's not even theater because it didn't. There wasn't a ton of drama. I don't know if you want to call it theater. But being, you know, a fun spectacle to see all of this, the greats gathered in one place, to me, make it just that. Make it an exhibition of great players gathered in one place. Don't put anything on it unless you're going to revamp how the teams are selected, including ballot box stuffing being banned, so the 238 hitting shortstops don't start in the National League, which is exactly what happened. Which is exactly what happened, and we talked about this too.
Yes.
Remember, Omar Infante was running like second or third.
I think he finished fourth in
the
voting.
He was DFA'd. What's that?
And I think he was finished fourth in the voting this year.
Finished fourth while being designated for assignment and cut.
Incidentally, for those who care, he got signed to a minor league deal with the Braves.
Oh,
about
super.
A week and a half ago.
Great. So the guy who finished fourth in the All-Star voting is in the minor leagues. How about that?
And that was fourth for the AL. He's now in the minor leagues in the NL.
I mean, just think about that for a minute. And so if you're going to make the game count, then you got to take that kind of crap away. The fans cannot have a vote. Or if you want to give them a celebratory vote, if you will, you know, give them a symbolic vote, okay, you get to vote, fans. It'll count for 1/5 of the total.
Yeah.
3/5 go to the players. 2/5 go to the managers and general managers who actually know the game,
or maybe
to the writers. But then you get some writers with
bias, maybe a bias or something.
Biases, yeah, which we've seen. You know, I don't like Albert Bell; he's a mean guy, so he doesn't get the MVP, even though he hit 50 home runs and 50 doubles, and nobody else in the history of the sport has ever done it. Sorry. Oh, and batting, what did he bat, like 327 that year along with those numbers I just gave?
I think he was at 315 that year, but still he was way over 300.
So you got to be careful with the media, too. So let the GMs, let the players, let the people actually know the game have the say there.
By the way, though, despite all these very legitimate critiques, I've been thinking about it through this whole segment just now.
No?
The Major League Baseball All-Star Game, despite all these very legitimate critiques were thrown out there, is still probably the most watchable of any of the four major sports All-Star games. I mean, because, you know, we talk, how many times we talk in basketball? Well, nobody plays defense. We know the Pro Bowl issues. I sometimes wonder if goalies really play, because I see a lot of 9-8 NHL All-Star games, and we know usually it's not that high scoring.
Well, it's not the goalie's fault. No, it's defense. It's like basketball.
Right.
I mean, you know, the goalies are going to do whatever they can. They don't want to be embarrassed, but the defenders, nobody is going out of their way to, you know, to check people and to really, you know, lock down in the crease.
But I still think basketball is worse out of those two winter sports. But then you get to baseball. Short of guys like Jose Fernandez, who said he was going to lob one up to David Ortiz, short of every pitcher doing that, there's not really a way that you can, like, not play, but still play if you follow. You know, yeah. you can't just take the plays off. The pitchers aren't just going to suddenly lob it up there at 70 miles an hour. It can't really work that way in baseball, the way that you can, you know, not do those things like defense, for example, in basketball. So despite all these legitimate critiques, it's still the closest to watchable among the four All-Star sports All-Star
games.
Yeah, I would agree.
Although I think the NBA game probably, and I don't know this for a fact, maybe you can look up ratings if you want. I don't really want to. I'm just kind of speculating here. I think it might get higher numbers because, as I said, from a competitive standpoint, it isn't. But people like alley-oops. People like alley-oop dunks. They like seeing Kyrie Irving put on dribbling displays and then lob one up to a, you know, to a cutting LeBron James, even back when they were opponents, you know, with Kyrie and in the Cavs and LeBron in the Heat, or Steph Curry launching from 38, or whatever. People like watching that stuff, even though it's not really basketball. Purists like me just watch it with one eye, because I know I'll just catch the highlights on SportsCenter or something later on to see the, you know, the posterizations. But if nobody's playing D, it's just kind of boring. But even boring oop dunks are things that people watch. So I think basketball might still have baseball in that regard. But that's obviously just a matter of opinion. All right, it's 3:32. We're going to get a quick time out of here. Look, we got a lot of stories to talk about today. Some of them related to what we did yesterday. We talked a lot about race in sports. And, oh, by the way, we're going to have to talk about it again. You want to know why? Did you see this news? ABC and ESPN are joining up to host a town hall meeting on race in America with President Obama. It's going to be on ABC and ESPN tomorrow night. They're going to hold a race relations town hall. Not ABC News, but ABC News and ESPN. I have tried so hard for so long to try to keep news and politics and those types of social issues separate from sports. I've tried for a long time to say when we do a sports show, we're talking sports. When we do a news show in politics, we're not talking sports, we're talking news. Because you know what? I want to give people what they came here for. I don't go to Olive Garden and say, give me a steak. And I don't go to Outback or Longhorn and say, give me a bowl of spaghetti. I go there for what they serve. I'm in the mood for steak. I'm going to a steakhouse. Most people, if they're in the mood for sports, they're turning on a sports show expecting what? Not spaghetti. Expecting sports. You turn on ESPN, you expect to see somebody breaking down the X's and O's of the latest game or discussing the possible trade moves that might be made at the deadline. You don't expect to see the President of the United States and Jemele Hill somehow now becoming an authority on race relations. She's a sports host on ESPN. So it's weird. I don't do that. Yesterday I did that because Isaiah Crowell essentially took over the news and sports cycle combined. And when you flip on ESPN television, there it is. If you flip on Fox Sports, there it is. If you flip on CBS, you know, everybody's talking about Isaiah Crowell posted a picture which condoned cop killing. Should he be cut by the Browns? We had to do that story yesterday, but I go out of my way to keep sports and news and politics separate. Because I don't want you showing up in my place for a steak and then me saying, here's a burrito. You didn't come here for a bean burrito. You wanted that, you would have gone down to Taco Bell. Or if you're slightly more daring, you might go to whatever. You get my point. I'm not going to do that to you. But here we sit, ESPN saying, nope, too bad. We're in it. We're doing this. We're going to host a town hall meeting with the President of the United States on race relations, which is going to go just freaking super. If yesterday's embarrassing presentation at the Dallas Memorial service for five fallen police officers is any indication, that is going to be a disaster. And ESPN is going to be there with their sports host discussing it front and center. So we're going to have to, too. I'm going to save it for tomorrow or maybe Friday to react to it. But we're going to have to do that, too. I didn't want to have to do the Crowell story. I will give you an update on that story, by the way. You probably know already. Isaiah Crowell, the Browns running back, is apologizing now. He already had a written apology crafted for him by lawyers. Then he had to call the chief of police in Cleveland, Ohio, to apologize on the phone. And now he's he did a video apology, which is supposedly on Facebook. And I've got the audio for that. It's funny if you watch it. If anybody who knows anything about TV knows that he is reading cue cards or teleprompters, because his eyes go right over the camera rather than into it. And that's where it is. And I've done enough TV to know that's exactly what it is. So, again, he's reading somebody else's scripted words. But he's going to, in addition to the apologies, he's going to donate a game check. Wow. To the Dallas Fallen Police Officers Fund. And apparently they're going to say that's enough. We'll see if you think that's enough. And then, of course, the other part of all of this is the WNBA's Minnesota Lynx. They decided to come out to their game two nights ago in full Black Lives Matter gear, shirts dedicated to individuals who lost their lives in confrontations with police. And that's how I'm going to phrase it. I will not call them shooting victims because we don't know all of the facts of the investigation. And unlike so many others, I'm not going to decide things without facts from the investigations being known. We do know that they lost their lives in confrontations with the police, whether the police acted appropriately and the individuals brought that on themselves or not will be determined by investigations. But because of the tension, them wearing Black Lives Matter shirts out with the names of those two individuals on them did not sit well with police officers working the game. Four of them walked off the post and said, "We will not stand here and watch this tribute to an organization that has called us racist and accused us of targeting people and killing them based on race." Those cops walked. I think the message was received because the Lynx went out to their game last night and did not have those shirts on anymore. So there are angles to that story we're going to have to talk about. Is it right for cops to leave stadiums if players are making political statements that disparage them? So we got that to get into. We're also going to talk about Anthony Gose, the strange circle of Anthony Gose, who has gone from Detroit Tigers Major League roster, the starting roster, not the starting roster, but making the roster as on opening day, demoted to Toledo at AAA, now on his way to AA. Why? Because, well, we're going to talk about why when we talk in just a little bit with the voice of the Mudhens, Jim Weber. He's going to talk to us in about 25 minutes or so. So we got that story. Tom Brady lost his appeal. Is he going to the Supreme Court? And Russell Westbrook might have a new destination. And it looks like the trading partner that the Thunder is talking to is in the East. How about that? That might change some things a little bit. So we'll get into those as well as we continue. A lot of stuff to get into. Some of it more desirable than others. But we're going to be responsible with it, as we always are, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bob Brandt's extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, I kind of second that emotion. Dial us up, 866-240-1065. Congratulations to two people who did at the right times. They were callers 10 and 11. Greg Christian of Oregon and Joe Haas of Delta. They're going to see the Mudhens and the Clippers on Friday night at 5th Third. And I've got a couple more pair I'll probably give away next hour. I don't want to do it tomorrow. Then it's a little tougher for you to get to the radio station to pick them up by Friday game time. And you know how it goes. So we'll give you another opportunity next hour to win the last two pairs of tickets that I do have for that. All right, I gave you the phone number also to dial in and join us, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Are you satisfied? This is going back to yesterday's topic. That was, quite frankly, the elephant in the room in the sports world and in the news world, a combination as country continues to react to anti-police violence, perceived minority violence by police in certain communities. And Isaiah Crowell decided, here's how I feel about it, and posted a picture of a cop getting his head cut off by somebody dressed in black adorned with American colors. It did not go well immediately, and I mean immediately. Fans went crazy on social media calling for him to be cut by the Cleveland Browns. I was among them, and I still feel that way. But he, after his canned and written for him by attorneys and publicists apology was released, which didn't seem to salve too many feelings. He decided to go the video route instead, and this is on his Facebook page right now. Browns running back Isaiah Crowell trying to make amends.
I want you to hear my voice and see my face and understand that I'm sorry. Last week, like so many others, I was frustrated and upset about what's going on in our country. I've had friends and family members that's dealing with violence. I've seen violence throughout the country, and I'm really just emotional about it. And during that emotion, I did something that I wish I could take back. I posted a really disgusting.
What's really interesting about this is that even in what is supposed to be a sincere apology, it's canned. It's edited. It's manufactured. Rather than just speaking from the heart for a minute and a half straight, you got to watch the video. And maybe you've already seen it. It's on his Facebook page for Isaiah Crowell. It clips from one section to the next, to the next. In other words, he had to speak, and then whoever is videotaping it stopped him and said, okay, now you got to say this, and then he would speak for the next segment, and then they would stop it and then start over with the next one. So either it was just kind of feeding it to him step by step for him to say, or it was he was saying things that were going to be bad, so they had to cut those out and then splice the next segment to the first segment. You got to watch it. I mean, it's very clear. You see it just clipping from one segment to the next segment. If it was true, sincere, honest, and heartfelt, it would just be from the heart, not scripted, not clipped, not edited, not manufactured, not produced by somebody with audio and video skills. It would just be somebody sitting there in front of a camera that doesn't shut off talking. Just need to throw that out there as you listen to this. You can even hear some of it in the audio. Jim, can you hear where it skips in the audio? From one sentence to the next, where it wasn't him naturally speaking, it was a clip to another part. Can you hear it? All right, Jim, I guess, is on the phone. All right, here's more of Isaiah Crowell.
Bad picture, and I took it down immediately because I knew I was wrong. Nobody had to tell me to take it down. Not my PR agent or the Browns had to tell me to take it down because I knew I was wrong. I'm sorry, and I hope you will understand that that's not who I am. I would never wish violence on anyone. Especially a police officer. I'm sorry to all the Browns fans, all the people who support my career, and all the kids out there who look up to me. And most of all the good police officers who are out there protecting us every day. By posting that picture.
Can you hear it again? There it is. You can hear it again over and over. It's a, you know, it's a canned, produced, manufactured piece. I don't believe a word. I don't believe a word. I believe I'm in trouble. They are mad at me, the Browns are. They might cut me if I don't do whatever they tell me to do. So I'm going to sit here and I'm going to read what they tell me to do, what they tell me to read. And by the way, don't tell me you immediately took it down. It was up long enough for 33 other twisted people to click like. Yeah. Cut that pig's head off. Yeah. Get him. Murder that cop. Yeah. 33 people clicked yeah, otherwise known as like. On your Instagram page, 33. So you didn't take it down immediately. You don't have that many followers that 33 people instantaneously went click at the same time before you deleted it. But you gotta see it. You gotta see it and you gotta hear it.
I became part of the problem. I don't want to be part of the problem. I want to be part of the solution. And to back that up, my first game check is going to the Dallas Fallen Officer Foundation. Also, I'm committed to doing whatever I can to create open dialogue between my communities and the police who serve us. I know this may not change your mind about me, and I know I can't take the post back, but I'm sorry. And moving forward, I'm committed to being part of the solution.
It's a minute and 35 seconds long. A minute 36, actually, but it's quiet for the last 2 seconds. Okay. Are the words okay? Maybe. But what are you looking for? What are you looking for if you are somebody who is a season ticket holder, who is outraged, or even if you're not a season ticket holder for that particular team, maybe you're just a football fan. Maybe you're a fan of the NFL. Maybe you're a Lions fan. Maybe you're a Bengals fan. Maybe you're a Colts fan. But you're just disgusted by this because, you know, I had no leanings to the Carolina Panthers, but I was disgusted by Greg Hardy. I had no leanings to the Baltimore Ravens, but I was disgusted by what Ray Rice did. I am a Cleveland Browns fan. And I was disgusted by Johnny Manziel. So it doesn't really matter whether you're a fan of that team or not. Maybe you're just you're looking for, if I'm going to root for this guy to be able to stay in the league that I support, especially if it happens to be the team that you support, I want to know that he doesn't have in his heart that the answer to anything is murdering innocent police officers. That's what I'm looking for. And I watched this video this morning, I watched it again this afternoon, and I just watched it now for the third time. And as I pointed out, the splices and the edits and the manufactured quality of this, the production value that was put into this by audio video professionals. And I, the one thing that I see missing is the one thing I was looking for the most. Sincerity. It's the one thing I'm looking for. Reality. Sincerity. Sit down. Talk to the people. Talk to them about who you really are and what you really feel. No edits, no splices, no starts and restarts and stops, and let's do that again. Take three. Isaiah Crowell apology in 3, 2, 1. Oh, no, you didn't sound good. Take five. That's not sincerity. That's what I'm looking for, is I'm looking for sincerity. Cam in Toledo, let's see what he thinks about all this. Cam, you are on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, good afternoon. Good, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, Bob. I just wanted to say, you know, where's the accountability in this? You know, like,
a game check.
Apologize.
A game check is the accountability. He's going to lose a few dollars.
And that's what I mean. But where is the accountability in the video? It's a PR team wrote it. I mean, it's fairly obvious to see. It's not a genuine apology. It's, as you said, scripted. It's spliced. It's edited. You know, and it needs to be. There needs to be some form of accountability. You know, he's not, that's absurd. That's not a punishment. You know?
So what do you think? Because first of all, there is no accountability. He's not taking accountability other than saying, "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it." Okay.
But
some people might say that's accountability. Some might not. I don't. So you've got the written apology. You got a phone call to the chief of police out in Cleveland, and now you got this little canned, produced video that he did, and he's going to spend a game check on the Dallas Fallen Officers Fund. And I expect that's it. Should they cut him? What do you think should happen?
I absolutely feel that he should be cut. I mean, he it's not an emotional response. That's just a fool. It's absurd. It's something that if you don't know that line shouldn't be crossed, you shouldn't be in the position that he is.
Yeah. And you know, the part about it, of course, that matters the most here, he's allowed to think what he wants. He's even allowed to say what he wants. Obviously, we all have that freedom. But when you are a public figure like a National Football League athlete and you have kids who trade your card, kids who have pictures or posters of you and your teammates, kids who look up to you, when you are going public with those things and influencing kids and influencing other people maybe in the community, that is where, you know, accountability has to be a lot stronger than a manufactured videotape.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he represents the Cleveland Browns organization. You don't see Joe Thomas doing that. You don't see Robert Griffin doing that. You don't see anybody doing that, quite frankly. So not only is he distracting the team, he's putting a huge negative spotlight on them.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It does not look good for the franchise. It does not look good for his teammates, and it does not look good for the NFL, which is always so protective, as you know, of the shield. That is always their first, second, and last concern, is making sure that the image of the league is not tarnished. I would have thought they would have come after this a lot harder than they did, and all I got out of it was a simple statement from some spokesman, not named Roger Goodell, that said it was inappropriate, and I can't remember the other word. It was inappropriate and something else he said, but he apologized and took it down, as if it's over now. It was bad, but he took it down and apologized, so let's move on, and I'm shocked by that.
And that's what bothers me, is it's a blatant just, I don't even know what you call it, a blatant just spit in the face of all the innocent people.
It's a smack in the face of police officers everywhere, and also of their families, and not just the families of those who fell in Dallas or anywhere else, but it's just of all of them who know that, you know, every wife or husband who kisses his or her husband or wife goodbye, who are going out to the job, and that officer who kisses their kids goodbye, that family that's left behind doesn't know if they're coming back. I think
absolutely.
My family knows when I go to work, I'm coming home. When you leave for work, you're coming home after 8 hours. You have pretty good confidence in that, barring some terrible tragic traffic accident that you might be involved in, but you have a pretty good shot at coming home. These guys and girls, when they go out on the job, they never know if they're coming home. They never know when the drug deal they bust is going to be somebody that's got a gun that they didn't see in time. They never know what is waiting for them, and it's because of that we need to be extra careful about how we, you know, especially if you're a public figure like Isaiah Crowell, how you depict them for thousands and thousands of people who look up to you.
Exactly, and it's you know, my question is where is this PR agent? Where were they when he did that? You know what I mean? It's like, how as a grown adult, whether you're emotional or not, it's an emotional thing. That's the excuses.
Well, I was emotional. You know, it's like the girl, the broadcaster who said, I don't have any sadness for the five cops who were shot. I feel like the shooter was a martyr. And she's blaming, oh, I was emotional. No, you're saying what you believe when you get your anger ginned up like that. You're saying what you believe, and then you were, of course, apologizing and trying to cover up the damage that it did.
In my opinion, I feel it shows your character.
That's exactly what emotion does, is it reveals what's in your heart, your character. I appreciate the call, my friend. Thank you. If you're on hold, stay there. I want to come to you as quickly as I can. We're going to talk more about this next hour, but we're also going to talk about the strange saga of Anthony Gose, who went from the Tigers to the Mud Hens, now down to the AA level because something is going on with this cat. Can't get along with his manager, isn't happy with his role, isn't happy with his performance, Lord knows what. I don't know what. So we're going to talk to the voice of the Hens, Jim Weber. Maybe he knows what. We'll talk to him as we continue hour number two next on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Sail to the plate. Swing and a high fly ball. Well hit left field. Way back there. Out of here. Chris Bryant back in San Diego. It sure feels like home. And the away team takes a 1-0 lead. The 2-2 in there. Got him looking. Ozuna knew it. And Kluber works a 1-2-3 second. The 1-1 is hit in the air left field. Well struck. Gonzalez back. Track. Wall. Out of here. Eric Hosmer. He goes the opposite way, and we are all tied up. It is 1-1. The pitch. Swing and a high fly ball. Left field. Way back there. Cargo turns, and he'll watch it go. So a single and then a two-run homer. Salvador Perez has given the American League a 3-1 lead. Here's the 0-1. Swing and a bouncer towards third. Donaldson gloves. Goes to Nunez at second one. Return to first. And that's a double play. That is the ball game. The American League wins it. 4-2, the final score. And the AL has won 4 in a row.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on, are we, as hour number two commences, 11 minutes after the hour of 4 o'clock. Thanks so much for being with us. The Major League Baseball All-Star Game is now history. The International League All-Star Game is not yet begun. That one gets underway tonight in Charlotte, and I can tell you who will not be a part of it. Anthony Gose won't be a part of it. He won't be a part of that game. He won't be a part of any games with the Mud Hens, at least for the foreseeable future. The strange saga, twisted as it may be, of Anthony Gose continues to play out, I guess. It's a free fall. Started out with the center field job with the big league club, ended up and withered at the plate in AAA with the Mud Hens, got into a fight of some sort or another with manager Lloyd McClendon, and then decided he wasn't going to come anymore. I don't know what's going on with Anthony Gose. I know a lot of people are asking, though, and that's why we figured who better to ask than a guy who knows the Hens about as well as anybody does, and Anthony Gose for as long as he was there. And that, of course, is the voice of the Toledo Mud Hens, Jim Weber, joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Jim, how are you this afternoon? Good to talk to you, sir.
Hey, pretty good, Bob. Yeah, a lot of breaking news concerning Gose, and it's getting more interesting by the minute.
Yeah, and interesting is a gentle adjective to describe this situation. Let's go back to what happened with the manager. If you can tell us what happened with Lloyd McClendon, to your knowledge or from what you've been able to learn and piece together here, because I think that is obviously the jumping off point for what has happened to his career now.
Yeah, what happened was it was early in the first game of a doubleheader just a few days ago that the Mud Hens beat Louisville twice. And what happened real early in the game, there was a fly ball out to it was closer to right than anywhere, and Gose was in right. And Jacoby Jones was in center. They had tried to position Gose over a little bit further, and he didn't move. So that started it. And then when the ball was hit out there, for some reason, Gose didn't go after it, and it was close to him. So Jacoby Jones comes over, 100 miles an hour, dives, tries to make the grab, covering 80 to 100 feet. And so the guy winds up with a triple. They take the early lead. Now, as it turned out, we won that game. But that kind of started it. And it's interesting because later on, even the young kid, Jacoby Jones, didn't run out of pop-up. So they were both pulled out of the game, not at the same time, but they were both pulled out of the game. In the second game, they put the kid back in, but then Ghost was not in the lineup. So I'm sure that started it. And somewhere along the line there in that second game, they got into it down in the dugout. It probably stems from when he wasn't hustling out in right field, and it just kept festering and festering. And so finally they had to be pulled apart, actually. And then Ghost cleaned out his locker. And I can tell you this, that three-day suspension, if it was up to Lloyd McClendon, he wouldn't be back in this organization at all.
Yeah, and understandably, again, without knowing all of his reasons, has Ghost talked? Is he talking to anybody? Has he given anybody any explanation as to his actions, his behavior, why he wouldn't be, you know, simply repositioned in the outfield the way he was being told to? I mean, because it sounds like it started right there.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on. He's a frustrated guy. If you remember, last year, he started 140 games for Detroit. All of a sudden this year, he can't hit. Things are going wrong. He winds up down here. He was a little bit of a poison in the clubhouse, which I don't like to see when you got young players around, because sometimes that stuff spreads. But, you know, so he was a frustrated guy, hitting 185 with us, not getting any better, but getting worse. And now, of course, it all winds up that he's going to be in Double-A, taking long bus rides with no flights, and he'll have a lot more to complain about. But, you know, he's a minimum guy. He's on the 40-man roster, but he's only like a 525. Of course, we'd like to be making $525,000, but it's something that the Tigers could eat. And so I thought they'd just get rid of him. But at least so far, I think they're trying to save face, because Major League ball clubs, they never want to admit that they might have made a mistake when they go after somebody.
He's 25 years old, very, very, very young, obviously, in his career. And maybe, like you said, that frustration is, you know, has gotten the best of him, and maybe it's gotten the better of his judgment. Has there been any discipline problem in his past that would indicate that what we're seeing now is going to be the new trend, the new him, and this is what he really is, or that this is a blip in the on the radar screen, something that, you know, he's just struggling to handle because he's immature right now, but he'll get better later?
Well, like you said, you know, being that he's 25, there's time maybe for him to get himself straightened around. But, you know, I've heard from the Buffalo people that, you know, he was one of these guys that the personality wasn't always there, and he could complain about things and be a clubhouse lawyer, you know, those types. And I've seen a lot of those guys. And then I've even, you know, talked to him a few times when he questioned things. So I guess I could say I saw this coming, although it didn't. I didn't think it'd be to this degree, though, where it would really turn into almost a fight between him and his manager, who, you know, Lloyd McClendon, 30 years in the big leagues, either as a player, coach, or manager. You know, there's a guy that knows what he's doing, and as I said, if it was up to Lloyd, he wouldn't even be anywhere in the organization.
Yeah, and I would have to concur with Lloyd at this point. I mean, like I say, you hate to give up on a 25-year-old, and you also hate, as you point out, as an organization, to say that you made a mistake going after somebody. But you also have to find out, is this just who he is and what he is, and we have to cut bait now, or is this something where he's going to suddenly look in the mirror in a day or two and say, oh, my God, what have I done, and apologize and try to make amends and go out and play his tail off, let his talent shine through, and work his way back from double to triple and get back to where he wants to be. And that's, you know, it's hard to know what's in somebody's heart and what's in their mind and what's in their character.
See, that's what he has to do. But the thing is, he's one of those guys where I don't know if he wants to admit this stuff. You know, he may think, well, you know, I was a great player in high school, and I was a great player in college, and I was in the major leagues, and, you know, I, and there's not a lot of I's that he should be talking about right now. But, you know, the attitude is not where it should be. Now, if he can turn around, apologize to everybody, and, you know, like you said, just try and start over, maybe he can get back. But his attitude isn't the greatest either.
You know, obviously, Lloyd McClendon, being the hens manager, doesn't call the shots up at the big league club front office. But how likely do you think he is to get his wish, and that they just kind of jettison Ghost, you know, by the end of the season or after the season?
You know, I think they will, because he's on the 40-man roster, and sometimes when you try and move people up and they're not, you got to clear a spot on the roster. And they've got one, two, maybe even as many as three guys that they could probably take off that roster and not even think twice about it. And he would be one of them. Again, he's a minimal guy. You know, they can eat a minimum contract just to clear a spot. So I could see that happening, and it wouldn't surprise me if it didn't happen. Though I think, as I said, if it was Lloyd, he said the guy's gone, just get him out of here. Well, they did. They got him out of there, and they sent him down to Double-A. So that's just another slap in the face, I think, for Anthony Ghost.
Jim Weber is our guest. He is the voice of the Toledo Mud Hens. The Hens in the All-Star break now. International League All-Star game tonight in Charlotte. We'll talk about a couple of Hens All-Stars in a minute. But last thing on Ghost, unless Jim Cushlin has a question on him, and Jim is here as well. Jim,
yes.
You've seen a lot of baseball, and I know you're not a hitting coach, so, you know, I hope it's not over the line to ask this question, but what happened to Ghost? I mean, why can't he hit? He is, you know, he's hit where he's been, and there's a reason why he made the club out of spring training up in Detroit. Suddenly he can't swing it for anything? Can you figure out what's going on with that guy, or is it all mental?
Well, I think it is mental because now he's had a couple of games recently where I thought maybe he was going to break out, like he had a 2-for-4 game, but then he goes 0-for-17. Then he would have like a 2 or even a 3, and then goes 0-for-20. You know, so there's no consistency there. And I think once it gets in your head, you know, it compounds itself into where you don't know what to do. You know, sometimes these guys need a shrink. Matter of fact, there's a coach that does that, Brian Peterson. That's what he does with the Tigers. He goes around and tries to help guys, and I don't know if that's what he's doing with Ghost or not, but I just have a hunch that Ghost is still in that spot that you don't want to be in, where you still think you can handle it yourself and you know what you're doing.
Yeah, sometimes you can be your own worst enemy. I think that's fair to say. Bob France with Jim Weber here. He is the voice of the Mudhens. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Cush, go ahead, bud.
You know, and moving on from Ghost, as Bob mentioned, it's tonight's the AAA All-Star Game. There's a couple of Mudhens, despite their place in the standings, which is right now last in the International League West. But Casey McGee and Chad Huffman, they will be in Charlotte tonight representing the Heads. Tell us a little bit about their season so far.
Well, I'll tell you what, without those two, I'm not sure where we'd be. We might only win 30 games instead of the 41 that we have. But those guys, the two of them have been in the top 10 almost the entire season in hitting. And they still are, because they're both over 300. So they're still in the top 10. Of course, Chad got to go because Aaron Judge, the big guy with the Yankees organization, got hurt, so he couldn't go. And so Chad also performed in the home run derby last night, and he was out in the first round. I think he hit 6, and the winners were hit a lot more than that. But anyway, he deserved to go because he was leading the voting, most of the voting period, and so was McGee. Of course, Casey got it, and the reason that Huffman didn't get it right away is because he was hurt. Everybody knew he was out, so people stopped voting for him. And then finally, when Judge went down, they said, hey, you know, he's playing for the Mudhens again. He's looking good, and so they pulled him in. But you know, they'll both be starting tonight, and I'm going to find a MLB network around this. I'm down in Florida for a couple of days, so I'm going to have to go across the street so I can see MLB and watch that game tonight.
You know, and that's interesting. You bring that up too, because I've always been wondering how the rosters get put together for AAA All-Star or any of the minor leagues. The AA All-Star game for one of the leagues, I think, is later tonight as well. We all know, and and Bob and I have talked about it these last couple of days. Some of the things to put the Major League All-Star game. But explain to those who may not who may be listening but may not know how does the voting or the rest of the roster for these AAA All-Star games, how does that get put together?
Well, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than the Major League game, because even though we have the fans vote online, their vote only counts for one-third of what decides. Now, the other third, or one of the other thirds, is us in the media, the radio announcers and newspaper guys, and then the other third comes from managers and coaches. So it's actually three different entities there that decide who's going. And then the manager gets together with the league, and they pick more guys, because every team has to have one. Even if you're lousy, you have to have one person go. So there's a bunch of different things that go into this. And a matter of fact, it never fails. Every year there'll be 5 or 6 guys called up before we get to the game, and then you got to put more people in there. And, you know, the Chad Huffman thing was a last-second thing, and we were happy he was able to make it to the home run derby and the game tonight, because it was his choice, because of late notice. He could have said, nope, I don't want to go, but he decided to go.
And that's interesting, too, because, you know, it is still the AAA All-Star game. You know, it's not really most people don't even realize, I think, outside of this area, that there may even be that game tonight. As you mentioned, it'll be on MLB Network, by the way. I believe 7 o'clock, the first pitch from down in Charlotte for that one. I do find what you just said, though, kind of fascinating, because we always, every year, everybody on shows like ours kicks around, well, how do you do things for the Major League All-Star game to get rosters better? And especially these last couple years with Royals guys, ballot stuffing and things. I got to say, I kind of like that setup. It doesn't sound as complicated as you made it sound like, because if everything's divided by one-third, I kind of like that system. I don't think that's something the majors would unfortunately look into, but I kind of like that, actually.
Well, you're right, because you can't really stuff the ballot when you're picking our All-Star game. Like you said, it's only a third. So no matter what they do, you know, I mean, like I said, Casey McGee was number one all year in the voting. And that's from everybody around the league that bothers to go on and vote. So, but the fact is, yeah, it's only 33% of the thing. And so the coaches matter, and so do we, those of us in the media. I like the process. I do. I like the process. It seems to work out pretty good.
We're talking with Jim Weber. He's the voice of the Mud Hens, joining us here on the Extravaganza on the Ticket. Bob France, Jim Cushlin, hanging out with you, going over all things Mud Hens.
I'm a listener.
Well,
sometimes I get to sit here and just listen to somebody else do the interview. This is good stuff.
But as I'm looking at it too, though, and you mentioned it without McGee and Huffman, who knows where this team would be. But unfortunately, the fact of the matter is, we're here at the All Star break, Jim, and the Mud Hens are right now last in the International League West. I know injuries and call-ups, and these are always the case at the minor league level. I know Mike Miller, our Drive Time, talks often with your broadcast partner, Matt Melzak, for Walleye, and it's the same kind of thing. Your roster gets messed up with constant call-ups and moving around, and it sounds like that's been a big part of what's gone on with the Mud Hens so far this season. Lots of people shuffling in and out constantly.
Well, yeah, that happens a lot. We have another couple of teams. I mean, the Cleveland and the Columbus, they have more moves than we do. I mean, some of these teams are already headed towards 200 moves. We're probably going to get there by the end of the season, but you get a guy like a Buck Farmer and some of those people that are in an option year, and you get three options. But then they can just move them up and down all year. They don't have to worry about losing them. And so that's why some of these guys, you might notice, are up there, back to us, up there. Some go up for a day, some not even a whole day, and they come back. And that's because they're in an option year, and you can move them as much as you want without having to lose them.
We are talking with the voice of the Hens, Jim Weber. As Jim Cushlin just mentioned, the Hens in the All-Star break, obviously a couple of them going to start tonight down in Charlotte. What do you project for the second half as you look at it? And I know you guys just talked a little bit about about where they are and why they are where they are. Given the fact that there was so much movement that you just described, I mean, how hard? Let me rephrase the question rather than what do you expect for the second half. How, if you're a manager like Lloyd McClendon and you want to win, and you know that if your best players are doing really well, you might lose them because of those call-ups, and then you got to still somehow try to win with the less best players. It's got to be the toughest job ever to be, you know, a manager of a AAA club that wants to be a contender, knowing that if you are, those guys are doing so well, you're about to lose them.
Yeah, and I think it's a new world for Lloyd because, as I said, it's been at least 30 years before he knew what was going on in the minor leagues as a player. Then he was Jim Leland's coach for a long time. He managed Pittsburgh for 5 years, and then he managed Seattle the last 2 years before he lost that job and decided to come to us. And, you know, he claims he's having fun with it, but there's certain things I can tell that bother him because he's used to the first-class travel and the first-class this. And you know, we do pretty well. We do things the right way, but it's not major league caliber, and I think that's what he looks at sometimes. But you know, I mean, you could tell the way he manages. He's trying to win games. He'll make all kinds. He might make three pitching moves in one inning. He's just not throwing guys out there to throw them out there. Although they do chart the pitcher, they have to get their work in. But you know, he manages every game as though it meant his job.
Well, you don't spend as much time in the big leagues as he did in all those different roles that you pointed out without being an ultra competitive guy. And you're not just going to say, hey, I'm just here to develop talent and get it ready for the next level and weed out guys who aren't going to make it, et cetera. He wants to win every time his guys take the field. And that's, of course, one of the things that you love about a guy. It's just got to be real hard for him to accept, that isn't the top priority for the organization is winning at that level. It is getting guys up to the next level.
See, what he's finding out is, and we've said this for years, if you take all the levels of baseball, A, AA, AAA, and the major leagues, AAA is the toughest, and here's why. Everybody there at the AAA level thinks they should be in the majors. Some have been there. Others have come from below. But almost every one of them, when they get to this level, because they know they're close, they think they should be there. So there, I call it the frustration level and the toughest level to manage. Now, if you're managing kids at A-ball or AA, I mean, it's great. You know, they're looking up to everybody and they're just doing whatever they have to do. But then you get to the veteran type guys like we have, or a lot of AAA teams do, then it becomes what I still call the frustration level. And although most of them are pretty good, most guys are pretty good about it, that's just the way it is. That's the life of AAA baseball.
Well, let's bring this conversation full circle then as we wrap it up and go back to Anthony Gose. He was at the frustration level because he got, sent down for not performing at the big league level. And now he's going down to what is supposed to be happy level, where these guys are doing everything they can to get back up. How will he handle AA ball?
Well, that's going to be the $64,000 question, because if he starts to become a poison in the clubhouse to these young guys, I can't see them staying with him too much longer. Now, if he tries to change his ways, as we talked about earlier, you know, gets the right attitude, and maybe tries to help those young guys and not get on everybody or start things, then maybe he comes back. So if that fails, then they might as well let him go, and somebody else will take a chance on him, you know, somewhere along the line, because, as you said, he's only 25.
Yeah.
But, again, if he doesn't get that head screwed on straight, I don't know if he's ever going to make it. I've seen guys like that that have all the talent in the world, and were out of the game before they should have been just because of things like this.
Well, and you know what else, too, Jim, as we wrap it up, maybe that is the best thing in the world for him. I know they said, you know, the organization sending him to AA, it's to give him a, quote, fresh start. That fresh start often happens in another organization. Maybe he gets away from this and gets around different people. That's not to blame the guys he's around now, of course, but just in his mind, since this is all mental, getting around new people in a fresh situation might give him a perspective that gets his mind right and lets his talent come back to him. And maybe he makes a productive career out of a career for himself. That would be a nice thing to see happen.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen now, you know, he's got that 525 deal because he's a minimum guy on the 40-man roster. But I have a hunch if he leaves Detroit, he's going to be like the rest of the six-year free agents in the minors. He's going to be down to making about 70, 80, maybe 90,000 instead of 525,000. And there's another reality about to hit him in the face, too. So if I were Anthony Gost, man, I would turn the corner right now before it's too late.
That's a great point. Jim, hey, I really enjoyed the conversation. It's great to talk to you. Keep up the great work, obviously, with the Hens, and thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Hey, anytime, guys. Bob and Jim, good to talk to you.
You too, sir. Thanks so much. There he is, Jim Weber, the voice of the Hens, taking a little break down there in Florida, as you heard. He's got the International League All-Star Game he's going to try to find tonight. Jim, you said it's on the MLB Network, right?
Yeah, I've been noticing that the last couple of years. MLB Network, about 7 o'clock for the first pitch time. And, again, Chad Huffman, Casey McGee, those are the Mud Hens All-Stars. And unlike Major League Baseball, by the way, Bob, the Hens will be back at Fifth Third Field to start the quote-unquote second half tomorrow
that
series.
Yeah, that's strange. We talked about that before we started the show today. You know, obviously MLB's break is a full 3 days long, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back on Thursday. But these guys got to go from the All-Star game, if they're playing in it, or from home, wherever they might be tonight, to right back to work tomorrow.
So. Yeah, the All-Star break for AAA was Monday, yesterday, and today the actual All-Star game. Now, luckily for the Hens and the players who are not in Charlotte, won't be too much travel because they're basically in the middle of a home stand now at Fifth Third.
Yeah. So there, that's a great point. So they don't have to catch a bus anyplace and show up in another city before tomorrow night. So good stuff. All right, great stuff from Jim Weber. Speaking of the Hens, by the way, what do you say we make it a non-necessity to hear Mr. Weber's voice tomorrow because you're going to be at the game? That's a nice way of saying I got more Hens and Clippers tickets. I've got two more pair that I promised I would give out this hour. Let's do that. If you want to go see them Friday night, did I say tomorrow? I apologize if I said tomorrow. Sometimes I start talking so fast I forget what I already said. This game is Friday night, the Hens and the Clippers, not tomorrow night. I've got tickets for Friday night, Hens and Clippers at Fifth Third. And I will give a pair to caller number 9 and another pair to caller number 10. That's how we're going to do this, all right? 866-240-1065 is the number, 866-240-1065. We'll put you on the radio. And on the other side of the timeout and the sports center that we're going to have right now, I want to talk a little bit more about the Crowell situation. We had a great discussion going before we switch gears to the baseball stories. If you want to talk about that, if you want to talk about the Minnesota Lynx story as well, we can get into that. Police officers leaving stadiums when athletes, they feel, are disrespecting them. That is going on in a couple of different places, too. And Adam Silver, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, said some things today talking about rules changes and talking about whether or not super teams are bad for the NBA. We got that topic as well. We'll try to squeeze in as much of it as we can in the final half hour, which is coming up after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is an extravaganza. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Interesting conversation there with Jim Weber talking about minor league baseball, which ordinarily may not be the most exciting sports talk, even in a minor league baseball town like Toledo. But when you got an Anthony Gost drama story going on there, suddenly it can take front and center stage. And I think this one does. And I meant what I said to Jim Weber, by the way. I really hope it works out for Gost, whether it's here or somewhere else, because he's 25. He sounds like he's extraordinarily immature. And he sounds like he's frustrated. And he didn't do anything, you know. I mean, this is not an Isaiah Crowell situation. This isn't something where he did something that is irredeemable and as an unforgivable thing. He's a frustrated kid who can't hit anymore. And as such, he's kind of lashing out at his authority figures. He's lashing out at the manager. Lloyd McClendon's had enough. They nearly came to blows. And if he's got to go somewhere else, let me just say this. Send him somewhere else. And I hope he does well there, only because I don't like to see 25-year-olds have their careers ruined because they got into a funk, they got into a bad way, they hit a slump, and they couldn't find their way out of it, and it led to them just being so immature and doing stupid things that it ruins careers. So I'll leave it there. Whether he ever plays again for the Tigers or the organization or not is a question that only time can answer, but it is something that that I hope is able to be worked out for him. If it's not in Detroit, then it is somewhere. All right, I want to get back to a couple of other stories. We were talking before we talked minor. Oh, by the way, congratulations. Speaking of the Mud Ends, Gary Rose of Genoa and Brad Thomas of Toledo. They were callers 9 and 10, and that means they won the tickets to the Clippers and the Hens at Fifth Third on Friday. So congratulations to them. By the way, I got another prize I'll give away before the end of the show. And I do want to do it before the end of the show because it's for something that is coming up this weekend, and I don't want to pinch you, obviously, like I said before, in getting your getting up to the radio station to pick up your prize. But it's very cool, and I'll tell you all about it in a few. We talked before we had Jim Weber on about Isaiah Crowell and the ongoing situation, his extraordinarily tasteless and offensive Instagram post indicating that he supports cop killing because he's emotional and angry, and everything that's gone into that since then. There's more on that story, not that particular story, talking about the story of race in America with respect to law enforcement and just the high level of tension in the country right now. Some of that was on display yesterday, even in Dallas, Texas, as a police memorial was held for 5 murdered police officers. But this story is going to go on for a while. In fact, ESPN and ABC News are teaming up. I talked about this last hour. ABC News and ESPN are teaming up. You're going to have a news host from ABC, our news anchor, and Jamel Hill, an African-American a sports host from ESPN, teaming up to do a town hall on race relations in America with President Obama on TV tomorrow night. So quite frankly, my long-standing rule and desire to do sports on sports radio and do news on news and political radio and never the twain shall meet, it's basically just being cast asunder. It's being killed, the entire idea of keeping sports as entertainment for us and our toy box of life to take us away from all of the the heavy stuff. It's not possible now. ESPN, for some strange reason, is hosting this thing on race in America, and I don't understand why. I really don't, but there it is. And it has invaded the sports arenas again as well. Minneapolis cops walked off the job at the Target Center in Minneapolis on Saturday night after the Minnesota Lynx players came out and were wearing warm-up jerseys, you know, shooting shirts, that were supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement and supportive of the two individuals who lost their lives in Louisiana and Minnesota in confrontations with police. Those confrontations, by the way, unlike many people in the media, I am not going to portray as illegal police killings of African Americans or justified police shootings of individuals who were dangerous threats to the officers in those situations. You don't know. I don't know. And it's irresponsible in my mind for anybody to make statements that say they do know because they saw a few seconds of video which may not tell the whole or any of the real story. So I'm not going to be irresponsible. I'm just going to describe them as the two individuals who were deceased after confrontations with cops. Well, the officers didn't take very kindly to the players wearing the Black Lives Matter shirts with the names of Castile and Sterling on the back. And that Black Lives Matter, and I'm trying to look, the front says change starts with us, justice and accountability, which is a clear signal to the police officers that they have to face justice and be accountable for what these people believe to be unjust shootings. And the back, of course, says the names of the individuals and Black Lives Matter. Well, the cops had had enough. 4 of them walked out on the organization. They walked out of the game, said, we're not going to sit here and protect these people who are going to sit there and wear shirts promoting a group that has called us racist killers. This isn't the only one. Going back now to the Isaiah Crowell story in Cleveland, the police union president in Cleveland said that if the Browns don't do something to make things right with the Isaiah Crowell situation, that he is going to recommend to all of the other officers in Cleveland that they not work the Browns games this coming fall. He said that Crowell's store-bought apology isn't enough and that, quote, he needs to go to Dallas, help the families who lost their loved ones last week, write them a check, look them in the eyes, and give a heartfelt apology to them. End quote. He said that Crowell's post of a police officer being executed by being beheaded was as offensive as putting a picture of a minority, an African American, being lynched in a tree from the 1960s. He said if he doesn't go through with to Dallas and make an apology to those officers for that horrifically offensive image, that, quote, he will pull Cleveland officers, sheriffs, and state troopers out of First Energy Stadium this season until he makes it right. As for Crowell, Loomis, the president of the Police Patrolmen's Association out there in Cleveland, said, you're a grown-ass man, and you claim you were too emotional to know that was wrong? Think we'll accept your apology? Kiss my, that same word I used a moment ago, I won't use it twice. Kiss my A, he said. So cops in Minnesota and Cleveland saying, I'm not going to support people who want us dead and people who think that we are racist because we are cops and that we are somehow out to hunt down and shoot black men or black people. The Minnesota Lynx apparently heard that message loud and clear because the follow-up to the story is they had a game last night and they did not go out in their Black Lives Matter shooting shirts. And I use that shooting shirts in terms of what the clothing is, obviously, because that's what in basketball what they're called. They're called shooting shirts, the warm-up shirts that they use to take their warm-up shots before games. They were in San Antonio, and they did not wear the shirts before the game in San Antonio, and they issued a statement. And it reads, quote, the Lynx organization was made aware about the concerns of the off-duty Minneapolis police officers. And when they say off-duty, by the way, these cops are indeed working while they're off their regular shifts and securing the facilities for the sports games for an extra fee. This is off-duty work. While our players' message mourned the loss of life due to last week's shootings, we respect the right of those individual officers to express their own beliefs in their own way. We continue to urge a constructive discussion about the issues raised by these tragedies. That was a statement by the Lynx organization. Bob Kroll, who is the president of the Minneapolis Police Union, I already just told you about the Cleveland one, praised the officers for quitting on the job Saturday, saying, I commend them for it. He said the four officers also removed themselves from a list of officers willing to work future games. He did not know who the officers were. Others said, this is a quote, others said they heard about it and they were not going to work Lynx games as well, end quote. When he was asked if other officers will fill in for those who quit, the union president said, if the players are going to keep their stance, all my officers may refuse to work there. So a very, very similar statement to the one made by the Cleveland union president. I guess the question for our purposes is, how do you feel about it? Are the cops right to walk off the job and say, I'm not going to work for an organization and protect the building and the players in an organization that think I'm a racist, that think I'm a murderer, that think that because I have a badge that I'm out to kill people who are minorities? Am I going to work for an organization that's going to allow a player to, and to protect an organization that's going to allow a player to promote cop killing to his thousands of followers on Instagram? Are the cops right to walk off and to threaten to not work again and protect and secure those buildings? Or are they letting their own emotions get in the way of their own judgment and their own responsibilities? Secondly, what about the players? We've had this discussion very briefly before. And I'm talking about a year ago or so when the St. Louis Rams ran out onto the field with their hands up, indicating their solidarity with hands up, don't shoot, which was an abject lie promulgated by a number of organizations, proven to be a lie by not one, not two, not three, but four different investigations at the local, state, and federal levels into the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And I talked about it then. This is back when I was saying, let's not bring sports news and killings and crime and all of that stuff, politics, into the sports arena. I thought that was wrong. And then we had something also similar when LeBron James and several of the Cavaliers wore the I Can't Breathe shooting shirts after the death of Eric Garner in New York City. That story obviously played itself out the way that it did. It really had no follow-up after that. It wasn't nearly as aggressive in terms of its criticism of police as the officers, or excuse me, as the shirts were of officers in Minnesota. But essentially, what do you think leagues ought to do? Do you think leagues need to start banning certain gear during warm-ups? Obviously, every NFL or every league has very strict uniform codes. You know, the NFL is probably the strictest about it. If you don't have X amount of inches of color at the top of your sock showing, if it's too much white and not enough of the color, you can be fined. If it's too much of the color and not enough of the white, you can be fined. If you add anything to your uniform, if you wear a sticker on your helmet, if you wear a message on your shoes that is not approved by the league, that you can be fined. And similar things are true in basketball of the actual game uniform in the NBA and in Major League Baseball. But it doesn't touch the pregame stuff. And let me tell you what I expect sooner rather than later. I expect there to be some sort of an announcement by most of the professional sports franchises that say no political statements will be allowed to be made or social statements or what have you on warm-up gear. We already have that ban on game gear, including shoes that you might personalize and write on, but we're not going to allow it in for warm-ups either. And the reason why is a very simple one. Why are these leagues in existence? Why does the NBA exist? Why does the National Basketball Association, Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, the NFL, why do they exist? For one reason only, to make money. And I promise you, if they start to see that they are going to lose money, because other fans start doing what those police officers did, and that is decide, I'm not going, watch how fast they put the kibosh on the political or social or whatever movement statements that they want to make on their warm-up gear. We used to make fun of the NFL, calling it the No Fun League. We used to, why does it matter whether somebody wants to put a message, a shout-out to somebody or something on their shoes? Give them some freedom to be individuals, we've always said, right? I know I have. I've always thought the NFL is way over the top fining teams, or players, for ridiculous uniform violations. But I got to tell you, I don't think it's so silly anymore. I think the NFL saw coming way, way, way ahead of time what we're seeing in some of these other games now, particularly the NBA, now the WNBA. That if you allow them to get away with a slight alteration of a uniform, a slight message, a harmless message on a uniform, on a shoe, on an armband, a wristband, a pad, or anything else, if you allow that a little bit, then you are suddenly opening the door to these political statements being made on shoes. Can you imagine somebody in the National Football League wearing hashtag BLM on the back of their Under Armour shoes? It's going to make a lot of people cheer. It's going to make a lot of other people really, really angry and upset. Probably, and including the officers working the games. So I got to tell you right now, those officers walking out and threatening to not come onto the job unless the teams put a stop to this stuff is going to have an effect. And the effect it's going to have is fans, patrons, customers are going to follow the cop's lead, and they're going to walk out, or they're not going to show up. And when attendance starts to dwindle because fans don't want to support and patronize businesses that are promoting and or endorsing political or social or racial views that people don't agree with, that's when the leagues are going to say, okay, that's enough of this. We've got to stop this now. It's costing us money. We're fine with you having your statements if you want until it costs us money. It costs us money. And we're shutting you down. That's what I think is going to happen. And I can tell you this, by the way, it will happen sooner rather than later, because I already know many, many Browns fans who have contacted me after the Crowell thing and said, I am not renewing my season tickets. I am absolutely not getting tickets. I will not watch them again until they cut Isaiah Crowell. And not for performance after five games and he's not running well, but cut him on principle for this. They are going to stand together, and they're going to make the owners feel it in the place where they feel it the most, in their wallets. All right, let's see what Darren has to say in Bowling Green. Darren, thanks for your patience during through the little monologue there. But you're on the air now. Let's hear what you have to say. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Bob. I just totally agree with what you say. My family from my great grandfather to my one of my cousins, were all in law enforcement. I tried to get in law enforcement and it didn't work out, but thank God I didn't, because I would probably either be dead or worry about being killed by some idiot, regardless of the color, regardless of their economic status.
Sure.
It's almost impossible to be in law enforcement today because of some bad people that that are not in the right job fit, that social media, it blows up. And don't get me wrong, what has happened the last couple of years with, you know, people who were shot when they shouldn't have been is horrible. There's some bad cops out there, that's for sure. But
yeah, there are bad, and we all know this, there are bad people at every single walk of life. There are bad
exactly.
talk show hosts, there are bad school teachers and bad shoe salesmen, and there are bad cops, and there's no doubt about that. The problem, of course, as we know, and this is the part that really people need to get their heads around, and thank you, Darren, for the phone call. I'm going to get some other people on before we're done. The problem with all of this, though, of course, is that because there might be, and statistically, it's not even a question. The narrative that there is a massive amount of bad cops and that police have declared open season on African-American males, and that there's this sudden spike in shootings of African-American males for no reason, it's a statistical falsehood. It is a lie. It is a farce. It doesn't exist. It's not real. The statistics very easily prove otherwise. In fact, the shooting, the number of African Americans shot by police has declined precipitously in the last 45 years rather than increased the way it's being told. But it doesn't matter, because the narrative of it being the other way around, that they are doing this, is what is feeding so much of this discord, and now it's bleeding onto our sports fields, onto our courts, into our arenas, because people won't research the truth. And because they also won't wait until investigations are finished before they go ahead and make a very, very boneheaded statements that denigrate police officers and the work that they do. Because it is an extraordinarily rare thing, for police officers to have lethal shooting encounters with people in general, given the population of the United States, let alone one demographic. So let's leave that there and go to Ken in Toledo to wrap this up. Ken, I got about 2 minutes for you. Go right ahead. You're on the air, sir. All right, looks like we just lost Ken right as I was going to Ken. Maybe he didn't think he was going to make it on before the music started playing, which I understand. Sometimes that is the case. But yeah, don't take my word for it. There are so many different studies that are being done, and they are shocking people, including sometimes those doing the studies, because they believe the media narrative about certain demographic situations with police officers and minorities. They're finding out, wow, it's not true. And that is something that I hope comes out when they do that special on ESPN television Thursday night, tomorrow night. ABC and ESPN teaming up to do a town hall discussion on race relations in America. What that has to do with our sports landscape, well, I don't know. But ESPN is doing it, so that means we're going to talk about it. All right, great stuff again from Jim Weber today. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I've got one more prize to give you on the way out the door, as I promised I would about 20 minutes ago. I got a pair of tickets to the HBA Glass City Burger Battle at Centennial Terrace. It's coming up this weekend, Friday and Saturday, the 15th and 16th. If you like that pair of tickets, I'll give them to you. If you're the eighth caller right now, we'll make it number eight, make it easier. Eighth caller at 866-240-1065. Good luck to you. Tomorrow, 3 o'clock, back again for the extravaganza. Mike Miller next from Highland Meadows. See you then.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances, and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.